Welcome to the Growler, a Hootay podcast hosted by Paul Dana and other bald friends like Mo Egger, Dave Nanamas, home of all your Bengals breaks, takes. Welcome to the Growler.
All right, welcome in to the latest edition of the Growler, Balds Don't Lie, Paul Dana Jr., fellow bald Mo Egger. What's going on, Mo? How are we doing?
Oh, man, things could not be any better. Neither of us have hats on today, so it's a good Monday. It's a great Monday.
You know, we never talk about it, but yet we always show up exactly the same, either hats, two hats, no hats. It's a little concerning. We've been talking over microphones together for a long time, and I think this is a clue that it's been too long. It's too much.
Are you telling me something here?
I'm saying this is our last show, is what I'm saying. We're never going to do this again together. We're knowing each other a little too well.
It's been a good run.
It was a good run.
Well, here's the really sad thing. I'm still making you come on my show. So really, who wins?
That's fair. Which we will do tomorrow on Tuesday, 3 to 4, ESPN 1530. Make sure you check out that hour and all the rest of Mo's content. It's going to be hard to talk Bengals because the Reds are here. They're doing fun things. So it's like, I guess we have to squeeze. It's more squeezing the Bengals in right now as Reds fever has shown up quickly.
Well, it's the best of both worlds, right? It's a baseball team that matters, that people are excited about, that people have some questions about, but also we're also now starting to just turn to the draft, which is really the fun thing of, like, the Bengals, you've said this often, they now participate in the fun part of the offseason, which means we don't start doing hardcore draft stuff on our show until really April. In fact, I was thinking yesterday, like, all right, April 1, let's start thinking about who we're going to get on over the next couple of weeks. Where there have been years where by April 1st, it's like, man, what else can we do? And so I'm kind of excited to balance draft and baseball, and should be a really fun next few weeks.
Yeah, and the Reds have quickly made it fun in the in absolute instant of a game that looked dead in the water. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, well, that's fun. If you can count on something like that happening. We'll save that for tomorrow because there's plenty more Reds stuff too. I want to do something really fun here today. We can talk about the Bengals offensive line drafting.
Oh boy.
Yeah, this is the stuff that gets people real excited and happy. We're going to relitigate some old stuff. But here's what I do want to do, Mo, because I think, look, at a certain point, you got to be able to look yourself in the mirror as a person and say, okay, here's my strengths and my weaknesses. Mm-hmm. How can I go forward and best augment my strengths? Okay. And that's why we have lots of hats, right? Mm-hmm. We wear hats a lot because it's like, look, I'm not trying to be anything. This is who I am. Okay. I'm a bald man. I'm a GM or a team that we don't draft offensive linemen well, is what you would sit there and say as you look yourself in the mirror. How should I proceed knowing that this is kind of the history? I have plenty of other strengths. Look at all the strengths. Look at all the receivers. Look at all the great decisions we've made. And some of the draft day trades have been really nice. Look at some of the things you've done with, you know, whatever, DB, whatever, name all the great strengths. What the Bengals have not drafted offensive linemen well. What to you does that mean does that make you think about this draft differently, where it is squarely in the crosshairs, specifically up in the first round?
It really doesn't, for two reasons. Number one, it feels like this is the perfect marriage of need and depth of class. Right now, you know, we could have made the same argument about tight end last year, but the Bengals need a long-term answer at right tackle. Guess what? There's lots of right tackles. And so I think you have a higher chance of hitting. I also think this, like, I've made bad meals before. It doesn't keep me from going into the kitchen and trying to cook. Like, you don't make a bad meal and go, man, I'm never going to cook again. And so because they've not gotten it right before means they shouldn't take an offensive lineman now. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I think this pick has to signify the beginning of the Bengals showing an ability. I'm being way too clumsy with the words here. They have to start drafting offensive linemen well, because you can't keep going to the free agency well, especially with what the spreadsheet is going to look like moving forward. But I've seen some people talk about, well, God, you know what? They don't draft offensive linemen well, so what are they going to do in the draft? Probably take an offensive lineman. Like, should you not take an offensive lineman because you whiffed on Cedric Obwehi 9 years ago, or maybe because Jonah Williams didn't quite play like the 11th overall pick? No, they have a need. They need a long-term right tackle. They need some other long-term answers on the offensive line. Do they trust themselves to make those picks? I would like to think the answer is yes. Now, we as outsiders can be skeptical about their ability to properly identify and develop offensive linemen, and that's fine. But at the same time, you know, if we're sitting here 2-3 years from now, when it's time for the O-line to turn over again and move on from some of the guys who have made up the line the last couple of years, if it's another couple of years of going, God, you know what? There's nobody they've really drafted that you can trust, and they're going to have to sign a bunch of free agents again. Okay, fine. But I think that's a very perilous approach, and one that's not quite as easy given just the financial realities of the team in a few years versus just two off seasons ago. So that's a long-winded answer, but just because they have failed with offensive linemen in the past doesn't mean you shouldn't take offensive linemen now, right?
I mean, have you gone into the kitchen and made 9 consecutive bad meals?
No. No. But like, I mean, you still need to eat, right? I mean, you
got to eat, but there's other options. Yeah. I can order, right? Like, yeah, I can, sure, use DoorDash. Mm-hmm. I can do any number of, I can, maybe someone else will make me a meal, right? Like, that's, there's a lot of different ways that you can go about it and say, look, how about, you know, like, look, my wife is an incredible cook, right? She, mm-hmm, makes great food. I'm good at doing the dishes afterwards, and a lot of times that works for us. Uh-huh. You know, yeah, what I mean? We switch, but like, we have admitted where we land sometimes, where I don't really have that strength the same way. And so the Bengals, I think, have done that in that, okay, well, we'll pay some of these offensive linemen. We'll pay Kappa. We'll pay Karras. We'll pay, yeah, Orlando Brown. We'll have this weird cycling right tackle thing that we do every year. And that can be the path forward and draft the other spots. The bottom line is here. There's no question that this team certainly is more than capable of drafting offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. They should be able to do that. Anybody should be able to do that. The bottom line is you go back and you talk about Cordell Volson. You talk about Jackson Carman. You talk about Deonte Smith, Jonah Williams, Michael Jordan. I'm not going to hold the pre-Zach Taylor, mm-hmm, drafts against them. They changed their scouting setup at that point. They brought in a new regime in order to be better at these types of things. And they've had their issues there too. In offensive line, they've gone through all offensive line coaches. Like, they're trying to figure it out. But to me, I do think that's something that you've got to consider. But I do think that is, then use the highest pick, the least amount of chance of screwing it up, in order to assure that you get it right. Or that's how you end up, you know, if you take chances there, that's how you end up in the 2021 situation where you do go from Penei Sewell to Jackson Carman. But that was a choice you were willing to make for Ja'Marr Chase, but that can be the difference. Not every year has those two dramatic to the quit. I'm not trying, but that's the concept of, like, you know what? Just take the thing when you can get the thing.
Yeah. And look, if we're talking about them drafting offensive linemen in round one, I mean, they have, like, I don't call Jonah Williams a failure. He didn't play like the 11th overall pick, but I mean, he was the best offensive lineman. Granted, this bar isn't very high, but he was the best offensive lineman on a Super Bowl offensive line. He was the guy they proceeded to move forward with in 2021 and 2023. Who knows? They might have been in a second consecutive Super Bowl if Jonah Williams is healthy for the AFC Championship game, the second go-around against Kansas City. That was 5 years ago. But it's not like there's a long list of recent first-round offensive line failures. And so to hold against them because they failed when Cedric Obwehi was here in 2005, that was almost a decade ago, a lifetime ago, a completely different regime ago. So do we trust him with offensive line, drafting offensive linemen? Maybe not. Can I trust him to draft a good offensive lineman in round one this year? The answer isn't no. Time will tell if they get it right. Had they taken Penei Sewell instead of Ja'Marr Chase, who knows what the fortunes of the franchise would have been, but I think we would be pretty happy with Penei Sewell, the player. Would we give the Bengals credit for, God, they got it right with Penei Sewell? No, he was this transformative offensive lineman. They didn't make a choice between Penei Sewell and another offensive lineman. They made a choice between Penei Sewell and Ja'Marr Chase. They would have gotten limited credit, I guess, for making the right decision there, but again, the guy was there to take. And so why can't something similar happen with 18 overall when the class is this deep of right tackles? And if you're balking on the idea of them getting better at that position because of something they did 9 years ago, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair. And I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that they can nail it in round one. If you believe everybody who says this is a great, historically good class of right tackles.
Don't hold Billy Price. Don't hold Billy Price and Cedric Obwehi over Zach Taylor,
right,
and Mike Potts' head, right? Like that's not as fair. Now Duke Tobin was there, the same set, and there's a lot of the things, but it's just such a different setup. And I do believe that they have recognized ways that they have failed at drafting and developing offensive linemen in the past and have always shown a willingness or an ability to learn from their own mistakes. There's not a stubborn nature to this group, and it's part of what has made them pretty versatile coaches as seasons have gone along and as they've progressed from year to year. And I think they recognize ways that they have gotten more out of Cordell Volson than Jackson Carmen and Deontay Smith and Michael Jordan and some of those others. And they admitted it at the time. Like, they felt like he was a guy that had all the right makeup that they wanted as far as the way that he played. And he maybe didn't have all the physical stuff. You'd love to have both, but I think they learned to make that priority one in getting the most, because what offensively on the offensive line, what serviceability, right? Mm-hmm. No major disasters out there. And that usually lends itself to the guy with the high floor, or at least the ability to get the most out of his talent for sure that you can bank on. And that could be anybody. There's a number of guys in this draft that you could say that is. You've got to have a willingness to do that. But they've really only had one first-round offensive lineman that this group has picked. That's Jonah Williams. He was their first pick. And you can look back at that, and I don't have a major qualm with if that was the position they wanted to take. It was fine. Like, that was a fine, okay, serviceable pick. I think the problem comes when you look at who was on the board and went next. It's like when you take Jonah Williams and behind him, here's this. The next six of the next eight players selected the year of the Jonah Williams pick are currently making at least $22 million per year. That is edge number eighth highest paid edge, Rashawn Gary. That is third now highest paid defensive tackle, Christian Wilkins. That's the top paid right guard, Chris Lindstrom. Brian Burns, now the second highest paid edge at $28 million. Dexter Lawrence, the eighth highest paid defensive tackle. And Jeffrey Simmons, who is vastly underpaid at $23.5 million per season. When those are available, right, it's like when to pick them, when not to pick them, and it's like when you, I have no problem with the Jonah Williams pick on its face, but then you're like, oh, but one of those sure would have been nice, and that's part of where the problem in the evaluation comes in too.
Yeah, at the same time, you know, there were those of us that year who were lobbying for them to draft, God rest his soul, Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah,
and it just didn't work out. By the way, I think you could look even lower in the draft and go, man, somebody should have reached for Deebo Samuel, my favorite player in the NFL who doesn't play for the Bengals. So, I mean, it could have gone either way. I even think I wrote at the time, like, go draft Dwayne Haskins. Well, okay. Jonah Williams ended up being a better football player than Dwayne was. And it's terribly sad that obviously we didn't get a chance to see what the future chapters of Dwayne Haskins' football life and just life in general would have, how those things would have played out. But you're right. It could have gone in the direction of guys. Montez Sweat is down there. There are others who have been very good players in this league, but boy, they could have gotten it wrong. And had they taken a quarterback in 2019, like many of us said they should, are they taking Joe Burrow in 2020? So you could go either way with that. I guess I view Jonah Williams as fine. Did he play to the level of, I think I've made this comparison before. Drew Sample's a good NFL player who does this one thing really well. Has he ever played like a second round choice? No, especially not how we think about tight end usage in this league. But is he a good player and a guy that I'm glad that they've brought back? Sure. So you get to a point where you stop holding against a player where he was taken and even some of the other guys they could have taken. In any draft, there are players you decide not to take and you understand they might end up being really good. Penei Sewell is one of them. So does the guy give you something close to what you're looking for during the time he's a Bengal? With Jonah Williams, the answer is yes-ish, and it's only yes-ish because he missed his first season with an injury and he got hurt his second year. If they take a player like Jonah Williams with the 18th overall pick, regardless of who else they could have taken, would most of us be okay with that?
I would think so.
Yes. Not every first round pick is going to be a star. Not every first round pick is going to be a Pro Bowl caliber player. If they draft the equivalent of Jonah Williams and play him under a rookie contract for the next 4 years, and he plays like Jonah Williams did when he was at his best, are we going to be okay with that? I'll be okay with that. I'll be more than okay with that.
Because the alternative is disastrous. Okay.
Right.
If you again end up down the Obwehi, Price, Harmon hole, and because those guys, that guy's going to play, and if he's not good, you are jeopardizing your franchise, you're jeopardizing the health of your quarterback, and everything else. It's just, it's so important. And that's why I like their setup now, that guy does not have to play right away. They have time for him to gain experience in low leverage, non-Burrow possible injury situations and really get a feel for what he looks like when it kind of is going, and that whether that's the preseason or whether that's time sitting on the bench or extra time working with him in the season, whatever that is. That's valuable to me, because that you get nervous that you're going to end up seeing that again. And I go through the image of Cedric Obwehi stepping over top of Andy Dalton when another player had just sacked him because he couldn't block him and Cedric wouldn't even help him up. And it's like, that's what you can't do, okay, is go down that road again.
Right.
And they've got to be better in that way in nailing this evaluation. It's, if that is the way they go, it's just such a critical pick. They're lucky that this year there are going to be sure bets there at 18, which there aren't normally when you're talking about that position. And for that fact, you know, the history to me, the answer to that original question is that the history says you really need to be going offensive tackle here for anything outside of really defensive tackle, probably just because of how hard it is to find a real player at that position as well.
Yeah, and remember with Jonah Williams, it was sort of the opposite, right? They announced he was going to be the starting left tackle before he even went to OTAs. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't have to do that now. And he was really put behind the eight ball because he didn't play his rookie season. His first NFL game was Joe Burrow's first NFL game. They had to throw him to the Wolves in that game against the Chargers because of the weird COVID offseason, and he didn't play his what was supposed to be his rookie year. So, you know, knock on wood, ideally, it's you're not going to have those circumstances. He is going to be in a situation where he's going to be surrounded by offensive linemen who have gotten it done in this league. If ever there's been a better situation for a first round offensive lineman to walk into than to be surrounded with guys who have had success in this league before, I'd like to see it. So I don't hold their history against them in this regard. It's not fair to do. And even if you want to hold their history against them, are you going to tell me they still should? Like, you may not trust them, but okay, there's a difference between what you trust and what they should and shouldn't do. Should they not draft an offensive lineman early, including with the 18th overall pick, just because they've screwed it up before? That logic, if you are nodding along, that logic to me doesn't make any sense.
No, and the other side is we'll just keep paying guys that are a little more put. That gets expensive, and you'll never get a great player that way, because the truly top high end offensive linemen just so rarely hit the market. And there would be a point where you'd have to vastly overpay. If you ever want to have somebody who's a little bit more of a real dude there, that's the only way you're going to get them, is if you can eventually get this right. And maybe this is the year that they do. It certainly falls in line. I wonder, the thing that's said a lot and people point out a lot is the fact that they have not drafted these highly athletic players. People putting all the how they have the outlier in the relative athletic scores of all of these guys. And a lot of that is partially, Orlando Brown's is a crazy outlier, things like that. But Orlando Brown said, hey, look, I was slow and not good, but you just got to know how to go out there and do it. That's the vast majority of the battle. It's knowing how to go out there and play the position. And now that Trent Brown's not going to help those numbers either, but that's, now we know they're leaning into that way. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be the risk of the play that they're going to do again? And that's the question, is if it's a guy who was one of these bigger, powerful guys. Now there's a lot of good athletes, but they've got to get that part right there, or you can say, oh, they're just going down that road again. Here mm-hmm. they go down the big, powerful, lumbering, non-athletic offensive line road, and that's what's gotten them in trouble here in the past. And maybe that ends up being the case, but I think that's something that they'll have to sift through and consider no matter where they pick.
Yeah, and I think you made a really important point there. I mean, the Bengals they've spent, to their credit, good money on their offensive line. It was a below league average offensive line last year, according to Pro Football Focus. And so really, if you want the ceiling to be high, if you want to develop an offensive line that is truly among the league's best, you're going to need to draft more than one guy. But that's really only going to come through mainly having a group of guys that you have drafted and then maybe filling a hole with a free agent. So, yeah, I mean, you and I talked about this 2-3 weeks ago. It's commendable what they did post 2021, looking at that offensive line and saying, great, we nearly won a title with it, but we got to move on. And they've gotten better, but now they're going to have to start nailing it. And there's no better time to nail it than when you have a class like this of tackles at a position that you obviously have to address here very soon. So I'm actually pretty optimistic that they're going to get this right. Assuming they take an offensive line early, an offensive lineman early, I am bullish on the idea that they're going to get this right. And then we can start to talk about in the second half of the decade how they stack young offensive linemen on top of each other and can eventually build a really, really good group organically through the draft and then fill in holes via free agency. I don't think the model that we saw two off seasons ago is one that can be repeated all that often.
No. So it's safe to say you would go chase over Sewell again, correct?
I would go chase over Sewell. Like I view almost any decision through the lens of, can I understand the thinking, right? Can I understand the thinking that went into the decision, even if the decision doesn't yield the results we're all looking for? The thinking then was, we want explosiveness. Jamar Chase can give us explosiveness. That's what wins in this league. We're winning on the outside. We're building the offense on the outside, looking in, and then we'll figure out the offensive line later. And by the way, it's worked. I mean, it's worked. And there was always the acknowledgement that Penei Sewell might be an elite player. Every evaluation said he had that possibility. You knew what you were turning down. They have gotten exactly what they were looking for from Jamar Chase. And the thinking 3 years ago made as much sense today. Makes as much sense today as it did in April of 2021.
And my point would be, I don't care if Penei Sewell ends up in the Hall of Fame. Like, they're not going to the Super Bowl in 2021 if they don't take Jamar Chase, and nobody's giving that back. Okay.
Right.
That was the right decision at the end of that year, full stop. Okay. So they were not going to fully relitigate it. That doesn't mean that that in the long run, that it couldn't still work out where you would go back and trade, say, you'd rather have Penei Sewell and Nico Collins versus Jamar Chase and Jackson Carmen, right? I mean, and there's a lot of other dynamics to that trade that we don't need to get into, but there are certain aspects to all of it of when you do push it back and you're trying to find the receiver later. Now, it's a little different thing, whereas getting the offensive lineman is just harder to do, and that kind of goes back to our original discussion. We don't need to belabor that point unless you have one more, unless you have a new addition.
Refresh my memory on Jackson Carmen. I should know. Did they trade down twice in the second round?
They had the 38th overall pick. They traded back to 46 with New England. New England took Christian Barmore, whom you might note is very good.
Yeah.
And then on the board as well at 46 was Aaron Banks, who went two picks later to San Francisco and has been starting for them at guard. Creed Humphrey, who notably went to Kansas City at 63 towards the end of that round. And of course, you can do that with any draft, but particularly those were the positions they were looking at. They were looking at interior offensive linemen. Those guys were there. They went with Carmen. They whiffed and they paid for it and trade back and gave up the ability to take Barmore. Landon Dickerson went one spot in front of them at 37, who is now one of the highest paid guards in football. So
the issue isn't that they took Jackson Carmen, it's that they maneuvered to take Jackson Carmen.
Right. Well, exactly. They knew they could move back because no one was looking for him at that spot. And so they added picks to get.
So like this go around, let's not overthink it and just take the best damn player at that position. Right. Let's not get cute. Let's just need a player at this position. Here's a player at this position. Let's take him.
Or they can just keep signing solid veterans for $4.8 million every year, apparently, which is where it's going right now. Not one of those guys has finished the season. And I would venture to say today, I hope this is not the case for his sake, but his history suggests that Trent Brown's not going to complete this season because that's not part of his history. And you just hope at that point you have picked the right guy to come in his place. All right. I think we sufficiently took people down to a dark enough place, but we tried to bring them back up. You know, it's like, yeah, some things have been bad, but you're on the optimistic side. So you know what? That's when you know it's not as bad as you think.
When I'm the optimist, we really need to look around the room and wonder what's wrong with everybody else or what's wrong with me. I don't even know what that means.
I think you're still on an opening day high right now. You're still feeling it. The opening day weekend, you know, you're just, it's the Reds are back. Things are good, which brings me to something else. Opening day being a holiday in Cincinnati, like we all know this is something like this just needs to be a thing here. Okay. Not opening day, actually. I would just say the day after opening day probably should be a holiday where no one has to work. I'd go for that. But I thought it was great. It's April Fool's Day today. And that's one of those days that it's just kind of tough one to take because everyone's trying to play the trick. Everyone's trying to do something and you got to be. RG3 had a great tweet. You retweeted
it. I got it right here on my phone. Yes. I was going to read it.
Read me RG3's tweet.
When RG3 is the voice of reason, we're really in trouble. So he tweeted out, April Fool's Day is the day people critically evaluate everything they read on the internet before accepting it as the truth. Funny, because that should be an everyday thing. RG3, chef's kiss. Thank you.
It is truly... We as a society globally have flipped it. Okay. One day a year, it should be accept the internet as fully truthful. And then all the other days should be like April Fool's Day currently is. Wait, who said that? Is that even the real guy? Is there any real truth to that?
Right.
That if that was the case, we'd be so much better off.
Yeah. I mean, on almost a daily basis, I will see something on the internet that I go, boy, that would be really great on April the Fool's. And it's like, you know, September the 3rd. Yes. So, yeah, I think the climate that we are all living in right now has sort of watered down April Fool's Day.
Yes. It makes it really hard. Is there a holiday or sort of a general day that is observed? That is worse than this, like for stuff that ends up happening. And it's like, ugh, this day, you know, why do we do this? Is there another one? I'd say, I mean, I would point out, I don't know if this counts.
Yeah.
I would point out tax day for the like, oh, did you get your taxes in time? You're up against it. Get your refund. Like, I just feel like that one's annoying just because everybody says the same thing, you know? And like most people don't even think about it that way, but that would be one for me that would stand out.
Black Friday.
Yeah.
Because I always wonder how many of those people are buying stuff for other people. Mm-hmm. So many years ago, and I'm going to call him out. Many years ago, I was on a UC football road trip, and this was one of those years where they decided we're going to have roomies on the road, which I, as an adult, I'm opposed to. I'm an adult man. I want to be in my own room. But anyway, so my roomie, Tony Pike, the game is going to be on Black Friday, so we had to spend Thanksgiving in Tulsa. My guy gets out of bed 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, gets in an Uber, and he goes shopping. And he comes back, and I'm still sleeping. And I finally wake up, and he's got bags of stuff. And I go, I got all your Christmas shopping done? He's like, no, man, this stuff's for me. How many of these people on Black Friday are buying anything for other people? That's what I want to know. The Black Friday sales event, I just, and the internet has changed this, but I'm old enough to remember when there was a day and time where I knew people who were going to go out to the mall at 4 o'clock in the morning and like drink Bloody Marys. And like, what are we doing? I've never gone Black Friday shopping. I never will go Black Friday shopping. If you are buying something for somebody and standing in line for hours on end, are you really concerned that that person's not going to love you as much if you don't stand in line and buy this thing for them? So Black Friday for me is maybe the single most annoying day on the North American calendar of significant days.
I participated one time, and I was living on my own, like, you know, down in, I think it was like Arkansas. I think it was my Arkansas one. And I was living down there, and it was a Black Friday at like Walmart. And I needed a new TV. I was like fresh out of school. I'm trying to like make my bachelor pad have, you know, the one thing that has to be good in it. And so I was like, hey, Black Friday, I'll go down there. And I ended up buying a TV bigger than my car. Like, and so I couldn't, like, I didn't anticipate like being like, you know what? You got me. Okay. I didn't anticipate that happening. And I got there. I'm like, this thing literally doesn't even fit into my car. And I had to find some way, call somebody that had a bigger car to get my TV back. And I was like, you know what? This is just kind of the universe telling me, don't do this. Like, this was a mistake in the first place. There's no reason for you to be down here doing this, but that was a nice TV.
I'm sure it was. First of all, I just don't like getting up early. I don't like, and I'm not getting up early on a day off to go stand in line. So I'm basically diametrically opposed to any sort of Black Friday. April Fool's isn't great, but again, the internet has kind of changed things on April the Fool's. April the Fool's, I called it.
April
the
Fool's.
It's been a day, Paul. I'm trying to think of other.
That's a good one. I would say I enjoy Groundhog Day solely for the fact that I do watch the movie Groundhog Day every year, and that's one of my favorites. But the actual act of like, did the groundhog see his shadow? And you got to like think that pretty unbearable. And similar in the April Fool's way, and that is just annoying. But that would be, those would be my two that I would probably throw.
So in Groundhog Day, obviously, Bill Murray's character wakes up every morning to the same Sonny and Cher song, "I Got You, Babe." Right. So in one of my early years in radio, I was producing for Jim Scott, and it was Groundhog Day, and I decided at the bottom of top or bottom of every hour to come out of the news by playing that song as sort of a homage to the movie Groundhog Day. And so our show ends at 9 o'clock, and our boss at the time was a gentleman by the name of Daryl Parks, terrific program director. But we get done with the show, and I pass by his office, and he goes, "Hey, Mo," he goes, "I got you, babe." And I just kind of looked at him and chuckled, and he's like, "Not in the demo." And I just like looked at him. And then he goes, "And you played it every half hour." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, you know, you either got it or you didn't. And I guess you didn't." So, there's my Groundhog Day story.
There it is. We actually, we have a song that kind of like comes on over our speakers in the room to wake the kids up at the same time every morning. And, and my wife likes to shake it up. And depending what the day is, or the holiday, whatever, like, she did that this year. Did "I Got You, Babe." Got a legit like early morning deep laugh, like that I couldn't stop laughing to when it happened. I was like, that's great. And I really enjoyed that my kids like obviously didn't know it and really disliked the song, made it even funnier. And so it was a good way to get my day started.
We ran into this year. So I have always loved, as an adult, I have loved St. Patrick's Day. It's an adult holiday. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, you might put some green on to go to school. St. Patrick's Day was like, all right, the adults are going to have their fun. We get Halloween and Christmas and Easter and birthdays. Kids get every other holiday. The adults are going to go have fun on St. Patrick's Day. So as an adult, this has always been my day, right? And then, you know, even having a kid, all right, kiddo, you could put on a green shirt, but the adults, this is the day we get to enjoy. Not anymore. I didn't know this was a thing. Maybe you did. So my daughter comes home from the neighbor's house, and she's got a shoebox that looks like you would put Valentine's in, right? But no, it was this green painted shoebox with shamrocks. And she goes, well, we're going to catch a leprechaun in here. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. No. That's not what it's for. It's there to put candy in, like an Easter basket, which was only like 2 weeks later. So now on St. Patrick's Day, if you have children, I suppose there's this expectation that they now get candy. No. There's one holiday that's for adults. One, it's St. Patrick's Day. So my wife and I had this discussion. She's like, crap, now I got to go out to the store. I got to get candy. And I'm like, well, Easter is still a few weeks away. She's like, no, for St. Patrick's Day. Like, can we put our feet down? Can we say no this one time? I, of course, got shouted down. We woke up the next day on St. Patrick's Day. My kid had all sorts of candy. I am diametrically opposed to the commandeering of St. Patrick's Day by children in this country. Can adults have one day? One.
No.
Just
no.
One day that I don't have to dress up, buy something, fill a stocking, go on a hunt. One damn day. Apparently the answer is no.
And not only that, it again forces us to explain why we are letting these creepy creatures into our house. So these we are
yes,
trying to bring a leprechaun. We are trying to trap a leprechaun inside of our house, as if it's like, I don't know how to explain about what's happening with the Easter bunny coming into my house. I don't, you've seen these things, I don't want these things in my house. I don't want that in my house. I don't, you know, I don't, I'm already still kind of uncomfortable about Santa coming down the chimney, but I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like all of these things, we're always inviting things into our houses and we're having them throw candy. They don't just get candy. They throw it everywhere and make a mess out of it. It's supposed to be the gist of it, which is even more ridiculous. I don't want to have to, the tooth fairy's coming into my house. No one really understands why we're letting all these things into our house. I think there needs to be a new rule that we try to sit down with children. Like, look, we're not allowing anything else to come into our house. Everything is on the front porch. I don't want to set a tone that you believe that that's the thing. And the leprechaun trap is what has set me over the edge. I was okay with everything else. The leprechaun trap was too much. And I don't like these little leprechaun goblins coming into my house and throwing, you know, green, making the toilet water green.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And you mentioned the tooth fairy. Now, I know that inflation has taken its toll on the American economy. When I was a young child in the 80s, I would lose a tooth and the tooth fairy would leave a quarter. So my daughter is soon to turn 7. She has lost 2 teeth. She has friends who have lost teeth. The tooth fairy has dropped off $20 bills. Like, first of all, what?
No.
And no, that's for the first tooth. Well, then what? For every subsequent tooth is 5? Like, what are we? I think there needs to be a flat rule for the tooth fairy. We're leaving $1 a tooth, no more, no less. Doesn't matter if we're in a bull market, a bear market, recession, depression, if things are going great. But I had a conversation with my daughter's friend's dad, and he's like, yeah, the tooth fairy dropped off a $20 bill. And I'm like, you guys live like 2 minutes from us. two minutes. The tooth fairy's not dropping off $20 bills at our house, I don't think. So I think there needs to be a universal standard that the tooth fairy just sort of announces. And we all go, yes, that's what the tooth fairy is going to leave. And it should be 50 cents, $1 for the first tooth, 50 cents for every subsequent tooth. We'll see if we can get that done.
Yeah, tooth fairy contract, I think, is something you should be able to print out and have the kids sign it, that I agree that for all of my teeth, I will end up with a total of $32 or whatever it ends up being. All right, Mo, we redid a lot here, didn't we?
We went a productive day.
Yes. We covered a lot of ground. I appreciate your time and hanging with me. So I will see you tomorrow on ESPN 1530 from 3 to 4. It'll be great.
Looking forward to it, Paul. Thank you.
Later.